you've been searching for that time to get on some sort of a roll here to get that good feeling, and you need a game like this to give you a chance.
We're still struggling to try and score goals night in and night out, but we've been able to do that in the last couple games.
Jets have some life.
It doesn't get any easier, and as the season moves on, pro games get tougher and tougher.
There's not an easy answer to that.
Second goes in, shoots, scores! How about that?
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show with Ezra, Dave, and Drew on your home of the Winnipeg Jets, TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. For all those joining us live this morning at tsn1290.ca, good morning, universe, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. 3 hours of hockey talk for you on this beautiful Saturday morning, the 3rd of June, an absolutely stupendous morning here in the city of Winnipeg, breaking records, shattering warmth. There's no such thing as climate change, though, says the President of the United States. We'll deal with that, I suppose, in our other program, the Illegal Politics Show.
Drew, we're only 30 seconds into the show, and I think you're already going to have to change your shirt.
It's a little warm in here. Not sure that they got the air conditioning cranked up all the way where it needs to be, but we got a couple fans blowing on us. Hot coffee was a bit of a regrettable decision, I think, this morning, much like milk was a bad choice. Nice, beautiful day, though. Gentlemen, good morning to you both. Man on my immediate left, Ezra Ginsberg. Man on my far left, Dave Minuk. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's the best way you can reach us here in the studio. If you prefer to text us, you can do that. Send a text to 129090. Standard messaging rates may apply, but you can reach us here in studio via text now. 129090. Standard messaging rates may apply. Of course, our website has got the latest Winnipeg Jets news. That's illegalcurve.com. Good morning, gents. How are you?
Yesterday was so hot that if you're someone like me who had to wear a dress shirt and pants to work.
No casual Friday?
It was casual.
Oh.
But
casual dress pants.
I still
they were cut-off dress pants.
I still can't wear shorts to work, unfortunately.
Yeah.
You couldn't be outside for longer than 5 minutes. It was, what was it, plus 35?
I think it got
33.
It was a stinker. You know, as they like to say, it was definitely one of those days where you're feeling the heat when it radiates off the sidewalk and it's coming, you know, it bounces off the sidewalk and you get it from both sides, from above and below on a day like yesterday.
You know, just as an aside, I love the hot weather. And for all of those Winnipeggers out there that are complaining about how hot it is, what do you want it to be, plus five?
Who's complaining about how hot it is? I don't think they're really complaining in the traditional sense. I think
I was with some people that were complaining. And
really?
As far as I'm concerned, you know, when it's that hot, you go find a patio, you go find some shade, you get a nice, delicious beverage, and you enjoy it.
I can't agree more with your plan. I like your course of action.
We go through 4 or 5 months of winter.
Yeah, bad
and
weather.
Then we're going to complain about how hot it is?
I'm not complaining about it, but the parent planet, you need to hang out with better people is what I'm saying. That seems to be the problem.
Whenever I'm hanging out with you, Drew, I need to hang out with better people.
Absolutely true. No argument
there. I'm kidding.
Whatsoever. Dave, how are you this Saturday morning here? You got some sniffles?
It's the allergies. Just some you know, allergens dealing with the spring.
The hay
transition.
Fever, the pollen, that sort of thing.
Yeah, all that stuff in the air.
Yeah.
So I'm muddling through that, but I'm good. Just a little congested.
Okay, well, nice to see that you're going to battle hard with us here on the Saturday morning. Like I said, we got 3 hours of hockey talk for you. We're all over the Stanley Cup Final. We're all over the NHL Draft. That's coming up within the next few weeks. And, of course, we're going to touch on the expansion draft, as that is rapidly approaching the day where the teams have to submit their protected list. So the speculation is going to run rampant.
Drew, maybe we should get Dave a neti pot.
Dave, do you need one of those?
I actually own a neti pot, I believe.
Really?
Yeah.
And have you used it before?
I think like a couple of years ago.
Yeah? You're not swearing by it or anything?
I don't remember. Okay. I don't remember that it was anything exciting.
Okay. Well, there you go. As he answered your question right there. In any event, Winnipeg Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff, have been a very quiet offseason thus far for the Winnipeg Jets. I think a lot of Jets fans might be concerned about that, given that there are certainly holes in the team's roster that need to be filled. Well, Kevin Cheveldayoff sat down this week with Pierre LeBrun of TSN, one of TSN's hockey insiders, spoke about the team, spoke about his plans leading into the NHL draft. Of course, the Jets drafting 13th overall at the draft in Chicago in a couple weeks' time. We'll be there in Chicago, or you guys will be there in Chicago. I'll be back here in Winnipeg, of course. And, you know, some interesting comments. I think the most interesting comments from Cheveldayoff had to do with goaltending and had to do with Connor Hellebuck. because most Jets fans would say that's an area of concern. The Jets goaltending is what let the team down last season. Could make an argument that's let the team down for a lot of the years since they returned to Winnipeg. Here's what Kevin Cheveldayoff had to say about Connor Hellebuck.
Connor had the opportunity 2 years ago to play, you know, 20-something games. I think it was 24, and he played very well. And, you know, we knew that fast-forwarding a year from now, back then, that we were going to be sitting there either having Connor play the entire year in the American Hockey League or having 1 year of National League experience. But at both situations, he's either going to be subject to waivers or, you know, the situation that we're at hand here where Pavlik's contract is done, and we're going to say, well, can he be a number one? So we made that choice consciously last year to do what we were going to do. You know, he finished, I think, 15th in the league, I think, in wins, 26. He had four shutouts, I think, which is 10. So his numbers for a young goaltender are very good. As an organization, I think that, you know, there could be an opportunity here if there is the right mix, you know, to continue to add to the goaltending side. So we'll look at anything that is available to us. And, you know, truly, you know, we have to look at all those different aspects because, you know, what's available to us is sometimes a nebulous thing.
That's Jets general manager Kevin Cheveldayoff speaking about Connor Hellebuck. And, you know, he's obviously not going to throw a young goaltender under the bus, nor should he, because Connor Hellebuck, you know, he is correct in that he finished 15th in the league and with 26 wins and he had four shutouts. So, yeah, that's the positive to, if you want to look at the bright side of Connor Hellebuck's season last year. But he leaves himself enough wiggle room that I think Jets fans might be concerned that he's not going to address the goaltending position at all. And I think that is concerning to Jets fans who say Connor Hellebuck can't be a guy you bring out there 60, 70 games without having a solid, capable backup, because that was one of the biggest issues that cost the Jets this past season.
Right, Drew, and you might be right about that, but I think the common belief is that Kevin Cheveldayoff is going to address the goaltending position by acquiring a veteran goaltender, right? And whether that's via trade or via free agency, that's something that is a priority for the organization. And you're right, when Kevin Cheveldayoff was talking to Pierre LeBrun there, you know, he does maybe leave the window open that, you know, they're going to go back to maybe a Connor Hellebuck, Michael Hutchinson combo, uh-huh, or maybe even bring up Eric Comrie. But I think that the possibility of that is very low. And when you look at who the Jets have at their disposal, I mean, they've got some really good goaltenders in the pipeline, Eric Comrie and Jamie Phillips. But again, one of the biggest problems with the Jets goaltending this year was they didn't have that experience, right? Michael Hutchinson had some experience in a backup role, but when Connor Hellebuck struggled, Michael Hutchinson wasn't able to give the Jets the goaltending that they needed, and that's why they brought up Andre Pavlik from the Manitoba Moose. So I agree with what you're saying, and of course, 26 wins, you know, he starts, you know, over 50 games for the Jets, picks up four shutouts, but he struggled so much that at times he had to be pulled. I think he was pulled at least half a dozen times.
I think it was eight times, if I'm
there
not mistaken.
So, I mean, overall, I mean, what would you give Hellebuck on the year? You know, you'd maybe give him a C-plus or a B. I mean, I'm a fan of Hellebuck's game, but guys, the Jets need to bring in a veteran goaltender. And I realize there are a lot of fans out there that want it to be a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury, but, you know, the chances of that happening are low just because there are going to be a lot of other teams in the mix, right? Calgary is going to be one of those teams. Maybe a team like Philadelphia could be in the mix as well, right? So, you know, whether that's a Brian Elliott, whether that's a Steve Mason, whether that's a Yaroslav Halak, a Mike Condon, whoever it is, I think most of us are looking at this Jets offseason and saying that getting a number one goaltender, or at least getting a veteran goaltender that can push Connor Hellebuck, has to be one of Chevy's biggest priorities.
Yeah, I mean, it's not, definitely not all on the goaltender. I mean, the Jets' defense last year wasn't great either, so, you know, that's something that needs to be looked at and addressed, of course. But I think a lot of people probably questioned putting Connor Hellebuck into that position in the first place and not having a, you know, a suitable 1A or 1B, whatever you want to call it, last year, for him to kind of learn from and grow with. Because, you know, I mean, all the people who really look at goalies, and, you know, Steve Eliquette being the number one guy, and, you know, his 150 game barometer, I mean, Hellebuck just hit that last year. Now he's played, I think, 170 professional hockey games between the NHL and the AHL. So at this point now, you would say he's probably ready to assume the position as a number one goalie based on his experience previously. Last year, not so much, but this year, yeah, because I think last year, what did he play, 56 games?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're thinking to yourself, well, is Connor Hellebuyck ready to do that this year? I think, yeah, maybe he is. And you know, Elliot Friedman had an interesting thing on his 30 Thoughts talking about Hellebuyck going out to BC and working with like a sports coach on his positioning and some of the things he may be doing different this summer. Yeah,
different off-season regime than previous years.
Yeah, and if you think about it, it's much like Mark Scheifele going to a Gary Roberts in Toronto, that sort of idea, you know, trying to change up your game. I mean, the thing I find interesting is that if you think about it, you know, your longevity in the game is your biggest asset in terms of making money for your career. And so you'd think that these guys would do whatever it takes to get to that next level as opposed to just doing what you've done previously to kind of get you to that position. You really, I mean, that's why you have to be impressed by what Mark Scheifele does, because he's not content to, well, I've made the NHL, now I just need to kind of maintain my spot in the NHL. He's continuously trying to improve his position in it. So if Connor Hellebuyck is going to do something in Western BC, Western Canada, I think it's in BC, with this skills coach, then maybe, you know, he comes back and the things that were deficiencies last year for him, he's improved on. And again, based on his current experience and maybe an improvement this summer, I think Connor Hellebuyck could be your guy. And then the reality is, like Ezzie just talked about, you bring in another guy that's not Michael Hutchinson and who's going to be able to be that veteran potentially, not to shoulder half the burden, but at least to give the Jets the opportunity to win some games that they needed to win last year.
I think the best case scenario for the Winnipeg Jets is you bring in a veteran solidifying force as a backup or a 1B goaltender, and Connor Hellebuyck wins the job and runs with the job all season long.
Well, see, and you know, earlier I said they need to bring in a number one goaltender, and really what I did mean was what Dave and you just alluded to. Really, it's not even 1A and 1B. It's ideally you want two 1As, right?
Huh.
So, I mean, right now you have Connor Hellebuyck, who you know is going to get the majority of the starts, or at the very least, he's going to get the opportunity to get the majority of the starts, but you want a goaltender that's going to push him, right?
Yeah.
And most likely, if they do acquire a goaltender via free agency, it's going to be a goalie that's either already under contract for 1 year, or they're going to sign a goaltender to 2, maybe 3 years, but I don't think the Jets are interested in signing a goaltender for longer than that, and that's because you also have Eric Comrie in the system, guys, and we know that Eric Comrie most likely is only going to spend one more year in the American Hockey League, right? You can't have Comrie spending 5 years in the American Hockey League. He's too good. At a certain point, you graduate, just like Hellebuyck did, right? So I think you do want to bring in a 1A, a veteran goalie that you know can give you the same type of goaltending that you're going to get from Connor Hellebuyck, and no disrespect to Michael Hutchinson, because I do like Michael Hutchinson. He just wasn't good enough last year.
You need a stabilizing force in net for the times when, you know, all goaltenders struggle. I mean, we're watching it in the Stanley Cup Finals right now, that Pekka Rinne, who was outstanding for the majority of the year, has, you know, terrible timing for the Predators, but is struggling in Game 1 and Game 2. And certainly not the parallels with Connor Hellebuyck, but let's say Connor Hellebuyck is your number one goaltender in the, you know, course of the season, and he has a couple bad games in games 29 and 30. Well, you need to have somebody behind him who can go out there and play game 31 and 32 and maybe even 33, who can win you the games.
And you ideally want to have a situation like Pittsburgh has, right?
Yeah,
with Matt Murray and Marc-Andre Fleury. Or you want to have a situation like New York has with Henrik Lundqvist and Antti Raanta, right? There are teams that have capable backups where they know they're going to get the same level of goaltending as their starter.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's ideally what Chevy's after here, and I do believe the Jets are going to acquire a goaltender via free agency. It remains to be seen who that goaltender is. We can speculate all we want and throw out four or five names, but it remains to be seen who that guy is, who's the best fit.
Oh, you're absolutely right, and there's no reason to randomly pluck goaltenders' names. We all know who the potential free agents are. We all know who's potentially going to be available via trade.
I've said this before, Drew. I'd have no problem with a guy like Steve Mason, for example. And I realize that, you know, Steve Mason's a guy who's been up and down in his career.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at that Flyers team a few years back that made the playoffs, and Steve Mason was excellent. I realize he struggled last year and his numbers were down. But a goalie like that you know has the NHL experience being a starting goaltender and can give you 30, 35 quality games if you need him to.
Yeah, look, he wouldn't be my first choice, but he certainly is an NHL goaltender, an NHL caliber backup goalie for sure, and probably a 1A, 1B goalie in the right situation, you can make that argument. I'm not sure that Michael Hutchinson is that guy anymore. I'm not sure he's really a... He's not a top-flight backup, as far as I'm concerned, and that's what the Jets certainly need. At worst, is a top-flight backup to Connor Hellebuck. It'll be interesting to see how Kevin Cheveldayoff addresses that over the next few weeks. But the area of concern in that interview is he wasn't, you know, wholeheartedly admitting that they need to address that, which I think is where Jets fans might get some pause. When we come back, we shift our focus to the Stanley Cup Final. Game 3 between the Predators and the Penguins goes tonight in Nashville. We look back at the first two games. We look at Game 3 tonight. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Rust, and Rust, a shot turned out. Rebound, score! Gensel! Brian Rust shoots for the far pad. He shoots for the rebound, and it goes off the right pad of Rene. And Jake Gensel puts it along the ice and beats Pekka Rene. And the Penguins lead 2-1.
Jake Gensel, the hero of Game 2. As it was a 1-1 game entering the third period, and the Penguins blow it open. Gensel with that goal early in the third period, and then it all fell apart for Pekka Rinne. Well, you can even argue that was a bad goal with a bad rebound, but the next two certainly were ugly as well.
Jake and bake.
Jake and bake. Nicely done. Shake and bake. I can use some shake and bake right now.
Put That's Gensel's name on Twitter.
Put it into some coffee? No? Jake and bake?
Yeah.
Okay. Anyways, Jake Gensel, 2-0. Penguins lead the Predators. Game 3 goes tonight in Nashville. The Predators, look to get on track on home ice. This segment of the show, beautiful day to go out there, brought to you by Bell Acres Golf and Country Club. You know, maybe you're looking for a place to swing the sticks, get your first rounds in. Bell Acres Golf and Country Club is the place that the Illegal Curve Hockey Show would recommend. You can check them out, bellacres.com. Get in touch with them. Make a tee time today, tomorrow, any day of the week. It is always a beautiful day out at Bell Acres Golf and Country Club, online at bellacres.com. So the Predators struggle in terms of the results in the first two games. One of the most bizarre game ones you're ever going to see, with the Penguins only mustering, what was it in total, 10 shots? Something like that.
Yep.
And
well, they didn't have a shot for 37 minutes.
Which is incredible and completely unheard of.
You know, I was saying this as I was watching Game 1. I've never seen that at any level of hockey,
yeah,
let alone the Stanley Cup Final.
It's rare, very rare, when a team goes an entire period without a shot. You say, holy. Never mind a team in the first game of the Stanley Cup Finals. Never mind a team that's got Sidney Crosby, Evgeny Malkin, and Phil Kessel, along with Jake Gensel, among your scorers. For the Penguins with that talent to not get a shot on goal for 37 minutes is just mind-blowing as far as I'm concerned. Never mind the fact that they also went on and won the game. I mean, the Penguins have to be sitting there saying, thank our lucky stars that they were up 1-0, and they did. And then Game 2, it's a 1-1 game, and then Pekka Rinne, I mean, let's not mince words. He's been horrendous in the first two games of this series.
Yeah, and, you know, Rob Volman had a great piece on NHL.com. I mean, if you look at the metrics of this series, mm-hmm. I mean, Nashville is winning the possession battle. And, you know, you talk about, you know, 37 minutes without a shot in the first game, but, I mean, Nashville's speed was causing Pittsburgh a lot of problems. Pittsburgh has not faced a team with this much speed, I think, yet in the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Nashville obviously doesn't have Ryan Johansson. I thought that their game plan was really effective, and it was all about pressure. It was pressure, pressure, pressure. Pittsburgh was having trouble getting anything going, not only in the offensive zone. They could barely put together two passes and effectively break out of their own zone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So give Nashville a lot of credit there. I mean, you could argue that Nashville has been the better team in five of the six periods, and they're down 2-0 in the series. Now, I agree with you, Drew. Pekka-Rinne has not been good. His save percentage is under 80%.
Huh.
So he's been bad. And again, I think what's being lost in the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final, Dave, is how excellent Matt Murray has been.
Yeah.
I think Matt Murray has been Pittsburgh's best player, and that's no disrespect to Jake Guentzel. Jake Guentzel has been fantastic, and Nick Bonino obviously was great in the first game, scoring two goals. But Matt Murray held the fort early on in Game 1 and early on in Game 2, really. And if you think about it, all of the goals in Game 1 came in the first period, right? They scored all of those goals in a 3 or 4 minute span. And then in Game 2, it happened in the third period, right, in a 3 or 4 minute span. So really, it's been momentary lapses. And you can't also forget to mention Nashville took way too many penalties in Game 7. I think they gave Pittsburgh 7 power plays. Pittsburgh didn't score on any of them, but needless to say, they got to stay out of the penalty box, because when you have guys like Crosby, Malkin, Guentzel, Kessel, you know, guys like this, Schultz, to put out there on the power play, you got to be more disciplined than that.
You know what? It's interesting. Pekka-Rinne against the Penguins just seems to have, it seems to be an Achilles heel playing them, because, you know, I think in 8 career starts, he was maybe 1 win, and that was like years ago. So, sometimes that happens to players where they just have this block against a certain team. And again, this is a good enough team that you can understand that. But it really is a shame, because Nashville has played so well throughout the series that the scores in the games and the score in the series is rather deceiving, mm-hmm. based on the fact that Nashville hasn't played poorly as a team. And 5-on-5, as he talked about earlier, Nashville has been the better team. And they've controlled the play, they've controlled the shots, they've controlled where the faceoffs are. You know, I think 60% of faceoffs have occurred in the Pittsburgh zone. And you're sitting there going, okay, so Nashville really has had control of the puck. And, you know, I think Sidney Crosby was like the Penguins' worst possession player last game. And it's just, it really is an interesting series. And it just goes to show you what a little bit of unfortunate luck can, you know, in terms of like the way the bounces go and, you know, go against you. And unfortunately for Nashville, when your really hot goaltender goes on a bit of a cold streak and the team doesn't necessarily, I mean, the team's playing well, and as Izzy talked about, and it, which shouldn't be understated, is Matt Murray's played phenomenally.
Yeah.
So as a result of that, you've got a team that's really controlling the play but can't beat a very good goaltender.
Matt Murray, .938 save percentage through the first two games, a 2.01 goals against.
He's been
average.
Unreal.
He's been tremendous. I mean, you know, certainly in the discussion, if not the front runner for Conn Smythe at this point in time.
I don't know if I'd go that far.
You can't win a Conn Smythe on 1.5 rounds.
No.
No?
I don't think so.
Since he's come in?
I think, like, Friedman's proposition about a split vote with Murray. I don't know.
Are you kidding me?
I'm just saying. But you, no. I'm saying
Malkin is getting the Conn Smythe.
I'm saying that's the only way you could do it, is if you'd have to do it with Fleury getting and Murray, because he's only won, if in theory he would only have won 2 rounds, right? So you can't give him. I don't think he's a Conn Smythe.
By the way, there's absolutely no chance UC Saros starts.
Okay, well,
game
that was going to be my next question. If you've seen how bad,
Are you kidding me? Pekka-Rinne starting Game 3.
Yeah, I agree.
I realize I Peter Laviolette right. has not announced it yet.
Yeah, he's told the goalies though. He told the goalie which goalie's starting.
Rinne will start Game 3.
I would be stunned.
I will bet all of the money I have in my bank account, which is about $21.
If that.
No, it's 19 because you bought all the Tim Hortons.
Yeah, that's right. But let me put it, okay, I agree with you. I think that Rinne gets the start. How short is his leash?
That's a good question. And you asked that last round.
I asked that last round about Marc-Andre Fleury.
About Marc-Andre Fleury, and you were right.
But UC Saros is certainly no Matt Murray, and that's because that's who Fleury had behind him.
UC Saros is a good goalie, but you're right. He isn't Matt Murray.
Yeah.
And especially considering that Matt Murray was coming off of taking his team to the Stanley Cup and winning the Stanley Cup. So you're right.
And being the number one goalie all season long.
Put it this way. If he lets in, you know, 3 quick goals in the first period like he did
Does he even get 3 goals? If he gives up a bad goal within the, you know, early in the game.
Well, I don't know if Laviolette would pull him after 1 goal. It would probably have to be 2 or 3, in my opinion. But again, it depends how bad that 1 goal is.
But if you give up 2 or 3... Look, you're going up against Matt Murray, and the Predators don't have the offense to be able to come back from
but
that.
No, but you're right. The stakes are different now, Drew, because the Penguins are up 2-0.
Mm-hmm.
If let's be honest here, guys. The Predators have to win 2 games in Nashville.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't go back to Pittsburgh down 3-1. We already know that in the Stanley Cup Finals, the team that goes up 2-0 wins 90% of the time. So Nashville's already at a huge disadvantage. Losing those 2 games in Pittsburgh, you know, their backs are against the wall already. So you're right. I mean, if Pekka-Rinne struggles early on, maybe he doesn't wait till 3 or 4 goals go in. Maybe he pulls him after one or two goals. It's possible. But one thing is certain. I mean, Pekka Rinne has not been good. And going into this final, Pekka Rinne was the front runner for the Conn Smythe. Now he's not, because he's been so bad in those two games, right? But again, I mean, you can't put this all on Pekka Rinne, guys.
Really?
The Pits can't? Well, no. I mean, it's a team game. And Pittsburgh, you got to give them credit. Even though, I mean, they're losing the shots battle, they're losing the possession battle. I mean, this is the defending Stanley Cup champions.
Yeah, but
here,
I would argue that with average goaltending, if Pekka Rinne is just an average goaltender through the first couple games, I'm talking 925 save percentage, 920 save percentage, which isn't anything to write home about. It's perfectly average. The Predators are up 2-0 instead of the Penguins being up 2-0.
Oh, absolutely, Drew. The Predators could easily be up 2-0.
So if you look at the Predators and say, where do you need to improve?
Oh, yeah.
Aside from goaltending, you can't ask for much more.
No, it's just, it's
and that's what's so puzzling about the first two games of the Stanley Cup final. Nashville, without Ryan Johansson, their number one center.
Their defense has shut the Penguins down, except for the fact that the goaltending behind them has been so sieve-like that it makes the goals against numbers and the defensive numbers look poor in comparison.
And it's not just that they've been, you know, shutting a lot of the Pittsburgh Penguins down. It's that Roman Josi, PK Subban, Ryan Ellis, they jump up into the play and they make it very difficult. I mean, you've seen it in the first two games of the Stanley Cup final. We saw this last round against the Anaheim Ducks. I mean, Nashville's able to maintain possession in the offensive zone, cycle around. They have a lot of speedy players. They have a lot of guys that can hit. I mean, guys like Colton Sissons and Austin Watson, I mean, those are household names now. Everybody knows who those players are. Victor Arvidsson. I thought Philip Forsberg wasn't very good in game two. He has to step up. I mean, without Ryan Johansson in the lineup, you know they're going to depend a lot on Philip Forsberg. They're going to depend a lot on James Neal. I mean, these are the guys that score goals for this team, especially when you don't have Ryan Johansson in the lineup. I would expect, Drew, by the way, that Mikko Salomaki goes into the lineup for Cody McLeod. I think Cody McLeod has just looked a little slow out there.
Well, he is slow. He's Cody McLeod. He's not really doing much.
And if Nick Bonino can't go because he was in a walking boot yesterday.
Yeah.
By the way, the fact that he came back in that game was incredible. I would expect it to be Carl Hagelin that goes back in.
He's been a healthy scratch.
Well, we've got Bill West coming up, so we can ask him.
And along those same lines, Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review joins us next from Nashville. We'll talk about Game 3. It goes this evening tonight in Music City, USA. That's up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Bottom of the hour, Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuke with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's how you can reach us here in studio. You can also text us 129090. You can reach us via text. That's again 129090. Standard messaging rates may apply. And of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is illegalcurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Bill West. Bill covers the Pittsburgh Penguins for the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, joins us to discuss the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final, and of course, Game 3, which goes tonight in Nashville. Bill, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me. Good morning to you guys, too.
Thank you, Bill. Appreciate you joining us. Like I said, Game 3 this evening in Nashville. The Predators look to get on track on home ice after the Penguins win the first two games in Pittsburgh. Penguins obviously have the 2-0 lead. But, Bill, from your perspective, is it safe to say that the Predators outplayed the Penguins in those first two games?
Yeah, I think that's a fair statement. At the very least, you can say they controlled play for very long stretches. That's what Mike Sullivan and several of his skaters have pointed out. So, yeah, the Penguins are not going into this game feeling like, oh, we've, you know, done everything possible to win game one and two, and, you know, it's been nothing but the best from us. So they're pretty realistic about where things stand. It's been an opportunistic series for them so far, which I feel like we've been saying about the entire playoffs. And, we'll see if it continues. The odds, of course, say no at some point. You know, the Penguins cannot continue to score when they're getting a dozen shots a night or thereabouts. But they're still working on their game, I guess is the best way to put it. They by no means are saying this is a formula for success against Nashville.
Bill, we saw Nick Bonino take that slap shot off of the foot courtesy of PK Subban in period one of game two, and then we saw him in the walking boot yesterday. Is there any chance that Nick Bonino plays tonight in game three? And if Nick Bonino isn't able to play, is it Carl Hagelin that's going to go in?
Well, it depends who you ask. Mike Sullivan, of course, yesterday said that Nick Bonino is a game-time decision, as everyone is. We're all game-time decisions, it seems, in this day and age. But I don't think Nick Bonino is going to play. You know, everyone that watched the game saw how difficult it was for him to get off the ice. I'm amazed he came back and managed to finish the game. You know, hockey players are just crazy sometimes, I think. But it would be very surprising to me if he did manage to get in the lineup tonight, because it seems like something has to be broken. I don't know how you could, block a shot like that and again have that kind of reaction and then there'd be nothing, wrong for some period of time. But if he is out, I would look for Carl Hagelin to get back in on the wing. I would think Carter Rowney would move over to the center position. That's what he played for Wilkes-Barre for most of the year. He's plenty capable. It will be interesting to see how they use him. Nick Bonino has had pretty heavy defensive zone usage throughout the playoffs. You know, he and Matt Collin are kind of their guys they use to win key draws and, again, just to be defensively responsible. Carter Rowney is somewhat capable. He certainly is kind of wired that way, but I don't know if they trust him as much with key faceoffs, so I guess we'll have to wait and see. But, yeah, in all likelihood, we're looking at Carter Rowney at center and Carl Hagelin getting back in the lineup as a left winger.
Bill, PK Subban guaranteed a Game 3 win for Nashville. How did that resonate with the Penguins players, and do you think that provides them with any motivation?
I would say it doesn't. I think what PK said, I don't want to say it was misinterpreted, but you know, he expressed confidence in the team. He didn't come out and say, I guarantee a win. You know, I promise a win. He just said, we will win, which, you know, is somewhat bold, I guess. If he says it in January, probably no one really thinks much about it. But the Penguins don't care. They're pretty notorious for being worried about what goes on in their room and, really just concentrating on how they're playing. Probably a testament to why they've gotten to this point in back-to-back years. They're just very good about, not thinking too much about the other team and not giving thought to the noise, as they call it, that goes on inside or outside the room. They're just they're pretty on task at all times.
Bill West is joining us on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Bill is with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. We're talking about the Stanley Cup Final, Game 3 tonight between the Penguins and the Predators. The Penguins with that 2-0 lead. Bill, when you look at the defense for both of the teams in this series, we know that the Predators get all the buzz for their back end because it's one of the best defenses, certainly in the NHL, certainly maybe of recent memory. Yet you look at the Penguins' defense, and it's certainly filled with no-namers, I would say, no disrespect intended, but Matt Murray behind them. You know, for being only 23 years old, just turning 23, precocious beyond his years, just how important, how much of a stabilizing force is Matt Murray's presence behind the defense that is certainly not as heralded as the Predators' defense?
I think Matt Murray is key, and I don't want to discount what Marc-Andre Fleury did, because I think he was pretty good and important too. But the most important thing that the defense and the Penguins goaltenders are doing is they're making all the necessary plays. As you said, Penguins defense is full of guys that no one would really champion as headliners and say, oh wow, I want this guy. Chris Letang is really the only one they've ever had that probably qualifies as that, and Justin Schultz maybe can get there, but even he, I think at times is just a little too inconsistent or doesn't have that complete two-way game. But the defensemen are doing a very good job of limiting the grade A chances. The Penguins are obviously allowing more shots than they did a year ago. That's why they've been outshot as many times as they have. I think it's 15 out of 21 games the Penguins have been outshot. They're by no means some sort of suppression specialist team like they were a year ago, but they're keeping the puck away from the front of the net. You know, they're asking their goalies to make the saves from shots out the perimeter or against kind of that low risk kind of shot. And Matt Murray has been very good about that. I think he in particular, probably more than Marc-Andre Fleury, he's able to control rebounds and control his body movement in general so that, you know, he's not overplaying shots. I think when Fleury struggled out, probably throughout his career has been the case, he overreacts, and then, you know, if he does give up a rebound or if there's some sort of second attempt, he's sometimes out of position for it. But Murray is notoriously good for having that, you know, quote-unquote quiet leg you know, kind of reaction where the puck hits him, it kind of just falls in front of him, and he's able to do what he wants with it. So I think the Penguins, if they can follow that that recipe, again, I'm not sure it would work over an 82-game season, but right now they don't need to win, you know, however many games to make the playoffs. They just need two more.
Bill, we can't talk about the first two games of the Stanley Cup Final without asking you about number 59. He's now got five game-winning goals in the playoffs, which is a rookie record. He's got 12 goals and 19 points in 21 playoff games. What is Jake Guentzel eating for breakfast?
Well, I don't know. Probably like Scrapple or something. You know, he's a Minnesota boy for the most part. He was born in Nebraska, but yeah, spent most of his years there. And he's just... he's one of these guys that has just maybe not even worried about the stage or what he's doing. And the Penguins last year, I think it was somewhat underrated or certainly wasn't noticed until, you know, far too late. But they had all these rookies that came into the game and just were playing with energy, were just excited to be there, you know, were somewhat naive or at least willing to be naive about the moment and their significance in it. And I think that's Jake Guentzel this year. He's just is playing. I don't want to say it's necessarily just having fun because he's a very quiet guy around us, and you know, sometimes it's hard to get a read on what he's really you know, feeling. But he's obviously a guy who is able to score and, you know, able to rise to the occasion. And again, I just think it's a situation where he's just kind of embracing the moment and not putting too much into it, not feeling pressure. You know, if he doesn't have a good game, I don't think he goes home and says, you know, why me? He's not trying to steal the spotlight from Sidney Crosby. So he's been that kind of youthful, you know, energy and enthusiasm that the Penguins needed this year.
You know, Bill, following up on that, I mean, he's just two goals away from eclipsing Dino Cicerelli, a Minnesota North Stars record, or NHL record, but for the Minnesota North Stars, of 14 goals as a rookie in the playoffs. Do you think he's understanding, though, the impact he's having on these NHL playoffs?
No, probably not. You know, he's certainly not a guy that I think goes home and reads the clips. You know, it's been mentioned to him, the, you know, Dino Cicerelli, and again, just the general, you know, the barriers he's already broken, so to speak. And again, Jake is not a particularly chatty guy. You know, I think he's smart. I think he's the kind of guy that, you know, is aware of what's important, I guess you could call it. But, you know, he's not a guy that's going home and worrying about his legacy or his place in history yet. I think he just loves hockey. His dad is, of course, an associate head coach at the University of Minnesota, so I think he's a rink rat. And again, he's still probably a guy who's just playing to, you know, keep his spot in the lineup. It wasn't that long ago. you're really heading into a series. There were questions about whether he might be a healthy scratch just because he had an eight-game goal drought and he wasn't doing some of the things that he does well. So yeah, I don't think he's under any impression that, again, he's the big show out on the ice. I think he's a guy that just wants to, you know, do his part to have a long NHL career, and obviously he's off to a great start, but you know, he's not the type of guy that's sitting back right now and saying, you know, I'm set for life.
Bill, you're in Nashville right now. What kind of impact do you think that crazy Nashville crowd is going to have on this game? Because the city of Nashville, Tennessee, has waited a long time for their team to get to the Stanley Cup Final.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. I think all of the city was out on Broadway last night. So, you know, I expect a lot of energy. I haven't actually been to Nashville before, so I'm very curious to just experience the crowd. But, yeah, they're obviously going to be loud. I think they're going to give the Preds some life. I expect a very energized first 10, 15 minutes. Now, the challenge, I suppose you'd call it, for Nashville is to use that in a positive way. If they go out and just run around like maniacs and either chase hits or just get too aggressive with pinches in the offensive zone, the Penguins might be able to capitalize. The Penguins thus far in the series, again, have been opportunistic. They've been a team that's able to take advantage of either giveaways or again, just kind of aggressive positioning by Nashville. So the Predators need to be smart about how they use all of that energy and that excitement. But that being said, you hear it again and again from opposing teams. It's a very loud arena. It's just kind of a place that if things are going against you, it can kind of build up. And the Penguins are smart. Again, they're not a team that gets too caught up in anything. But if Nashville finds a way to get an early lead, that's one more, hurdle, I guess, they have to overcome.
Bill, have you had a chance to try the catfish yet?
No catfish for me, or hot chicken.
Hot chicken.
Another thing, right? But, nothing, no specialties. I had some barbecue yesterday. That was delicious. But looking forward to sampling some more of the local offerings here today.
Bill, we'll let you go on this last question. Peter Laviolette's playing a little bit of mind games as to who their starting goaltender is going to be for the Predators. Do you foresee any way it's not Pekka Rinne? And if it is Pekka Rinne, as I think everybody here in this room expects it will be, how short of a leash does he have given his performances in games 1 and 2?
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I think it is Pekka Rinne. And it's probably a longer leash, I guess, than it should be, at least in my opinion. He's done very well for them this season and certainly in the playoffs, but I think the numbers are what they are. I've seen some on Twitter that point out that he's never been a guy with a particularly great high danger save percentage, and the Penguins are the kind of team that generates high danger looks. So now I don't in general believe in being super loyal to a goalie, especially if you have a capable backup, which I think Juuse Saros is. So if you're a team that's suddenly staring at a potential 3-0 deficit in the Stanley Cup final, why not? If the Predators play well and either get a lead or, don't seem to be struggling to keep the puck out of their own net, then sure, go with Pekka Rinne. But if there's any question or any situation where you're suddenly asking yourself, is Pekka Rinne losing the cup for the Predators, I think you got to get rid of him. Not trade, but certainly put him on the bench. I think Saros is a very capable backup. I actually was tempted to ask him about it on media day. Matt Murray was an inspiration to all young backups because, of course, that's kind of what Matt Murray did last year. He stole the starting spot and proved that he was more than capable of doing it. I don't know if we have enough of a sample size on Saros yet to say that, but again, the history on Pekka Rinne is kind of up and down, and Nashville cannot afford to have that kind of up and down performance right now. So if I'm Peter Laviolette, I use a pretty short leash, but coaches can sometimes be irrationally loyal, and we'll see if he's one of them.
Bill West is with the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. He joins us from Nashville, where the Predators and the Penguins will do battle in game 3 of the Stanley Cup final later on tonight. Bill, appreciate your time. Always appreciate your insight. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, guys.
Take care, Bill. When we come back, we discuss the Penguins a little bit more, talk about their window as a Stanley Cup contender. Is this maybe just the start of a Penguins dynasty? Talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Illegal Curve Hockey Show returns. Now you're on the curve on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
T 10 minutes before the top of the hour. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to Bill West of the Pittsburgh Tribune Review. In case you missed any of that interview, any of the show in its entirety, or any of the other interviews that are coming up in the next 2 hours and 10 minutes, you can download the show via iTunes, via Google Play, listen to it on your Apple or Android device. Just check it out in your favorite Pod Center. That's where you can subscribe to the show, get it sent to you each and every week. This segment of the show brought to you by our good friends at Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. If you want awesome jerseys for your rec team or have a jersey you want personalized, visit Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. You can check out their new showroom, 982 Portage Avenue. That's the corner of Portage and Sherburne. And you can be like the House of Ashkenazi softball team and get Keener Jerseys to make you your brand new softball jerseys. Dave, you should be sporting that new jersey coming up in the next couple weeks, I believe. In my conversations with them, they are producing those jerseys as we speak.
I played a couple of years on the House.
Yeah, and the House has never been better since then.
We were a bottom feeder team at the time, but we never had more fun.
Dave, let's just say the House almost burned down.
You almost burnt down the House.
No, I had a decent slugging percentage. I had a very good drinking percentage.
Yeah, we know that you have a very good drinking percentage in all aspects of life. That's not just restricted to softball. Penguins, two games away from repeating as Stanley Cup champions. You know, and sort of one of the buzzwords or the buzz phrases when you talk about any team nowadays is their window. What's their window to win the Stanley Cup championship? Do the Anaheim Ducks, is their window closing because they lost to the Predators in the Western Conference Finals? The Chicago Blackhawks, has their window closed because they lost in the first round?
No.
Or as a result of losing in the first round?
No.
This Pittsburgh Penguins team, it's so rare. I mean, the closest thing that we've had to a dynasty as of late has been the Blackhawks, three
yep.
cups in 5 years.
Yep.
Is this Penguins team built to match and or better what we've seen the Blackhawks do recently?
I think they are. And by the way, I don't think Chicago's window is closed, and I certainly don't think Washington's window is closed. You don't get 118 points, Dave, and then all of a sudden your window closes because you lose in the second round to the Pittsburgh Penguins. And what I find the most interesting about this Pittsburgh Penguins team is, you know, there is going to be some turnover in the offseason, whether they win the Stanley Cup or not, Drew, right? And you've got some older defensemen, guys like Ron Hainsey and Mark Streit, that I would expect aren't going to be back. And Trevor Daley's also UFA. I know you want to talk about him later in the show as well. So Trevor Daley could be a potential guy that doesn't come back as well. And then, you know, a guy like Derek Pouliot, a 2012 first-round pick, he's a guy that's going to get a chance, more of a chance next year. Chad Ruedel, who's injured right now, he's a younger defenseman, 27. He'll probably get a chance. So, you know, there is going to be some turnover, and you know there's also going to be some turnover on forward. But when you're talking about the turnover on forward, it's not major core pieces, right?
Uh-huh.
Matt Cullen is a UFA. This might be his last year. It's certainly going to be one of his last years. A guy like Nick Bonino, another guy I know you want to talk about later, 29 years old. He could be a UFA. He's probably not going to come back in the series. We'll see. Certainly looks like he's not going to play in Game 3. But when you talk about the core, so obviously you're talking about Malkin, Crosby, Kessel. You throw in a guy like Jake Guentzel, who's 22 years old. I'd throw him as part of the core. But especially when you look at some of the players that have come up from Wilkes-Barre, guys like Connor Sheary, guys like Brian Rust. I mean, these guys are in their early 20s right now, right? Sheary's 24, I believe, and then Rust is 25. So, I mean, I guess technically Rust is 25. But needless to say, these guys are in the younger stages of their career, right? So when you look at that, plus when you look at the defense, Drew, and I realize Chris Letang is a major concern because he's under contract for 4 more years and he's got, you know, the injury concerns. But when you're talking about guys like Ollie Matta and Justin Schultz, I mean, these aren't old players, right? So for me, the core of this team still has many years left at being Stanley Cup contenders, whether it's 3 or 4 years. I think this Pittsburgh Penguins team is set up very nicely. Now, they're obviously going to have salary cap concerns later down the road when you have players that need to be re-signed. Patrick Hornquist is another guy. He's under contract for 1 more year. So do you re-sign him or do you let him go? But the core of this team is still at a young enough age that I believe that they can compete for a Stanley Cup for 3 or 4 years at least.
And I think the key is, and the reason why Jason Botterill was so sought after as a potential GM was because they built such a strong AHL system with Wilkes-Barre. And I think that they've got a number of prospects, as Ezzie just talked about, that you could see come in and fill roles for older players or players you're going to lose due to salary cap restrictions. So, you know, you've got like an Oscar Sundqvist, who's a center, a young center who could come into the organization. You got Tristan Jarry, who's a, you know, a young goalie who can always come in if you need a backup for Matt Murray, obviously, when Marc-Andre Fleury inevitably goes somewhere else next year. Mm-hmm. So there are a number of pieces in Wilkes-Barre that you can bring up and kind of maybe seamlessly transition in with those veteran pieces you already have. Now, do I think that this, provided Pittsburgh wins the Stanley Cup this year, do I think that they're guaranteed to win next year? No, but I mean, how many people picked them to win this year?
It's so hard to go back-to-back. To make back-to-back Cup finals.
That's right.
The thinking was that the strain and the extra games you play just to get to a Cup final the year previous will take, you know, prevents you from going back there again.
Just imagine what Marian Hossa had to deal with going back to back to back.
Well, I mean, finally won one back in the day after, you know, jumping back and forth, for, you know, looking for that Cup for so many years. But, you know, this Penguins team, I think to your point, Ezzie, they're not in salary cap danger. I mean, you look at next season, they have 16 guys under contract, and their projected cap hit is only $60 million. That doesn't even take into account Marc-Andre Fleury. If you get his contract off the books, well, there's another $5.75 million you're freeing up. Matt Murray right now under his contract with $3.75 million per season for the next 3 years might be one of the best contracts in the NHL.
Yeah, and we expect Connor Sheary and Brian Rust to be signed their RFAs in the summer. But even if you lose Nick Bonino, even if you lose Braun Hainsey, Mark Streit, maybe even Trevor Daley, I mean, you can go out in free agency and acquire a defenseman. No disrespect to Ron Hainsey, but he's a 4 or 5 defenseman at best. You can acquire those types of players in the free agent market, or certainly closer to the trade deadline like they did this year with Ron Hainsey, right? So, I mean, they're not going to lose anybody that's a core piece of this team. And, you know, we've seen Jim Rutherford do an excellent job via trades and via free agency to supplement the core pieces that he has, right? So you're talking about guys like Justin Schultz, you're talking about guys like Trevor Daley, and as Dave mentioned earlier, Wilkes-Barre is a model as an American Hockey League franchise because they've had success at the AHL level and they've been able to bring up these players at the right age, not at 20 or 21 years old, at 22, 23, 24 years old, right? That's why even a guy like Carter Rowney, who's actually in his late 20s, he had no NHL experience before this year, and he's played a key role on that fourth line, right? Former member of UND. So, I mean, they've had a great pipeline from the AHL to the NHL, and there's no reason for that to not continue. And when you talk about high-end prospects, Drew, they don't have, a Kyle Connor or Jack Roslovic coming up through the system. But a guy like Derek Pouliot, he's going to get an opportunity. He's got upside. And a guy like Daniel Sprong, he's a guy that they rushed a little bit into the NHL. So they do have some prospects. But you look at Chicago, they haven't drafted high in the first round for quite some time, but they've been able to produce the Vinny Hinostrozas and the Ryan Hartmans and the Schmaltzes, the guys like that.
The Penguins don't have nearly the salary cap trouble that the Blackhawks have had for the last, 5 years that have cost them, core members of their team just because of the inability with the bloated contracts that they have on the books. Chicago, probably had to sign those guys, so it's not bloated necessarily in the negative sense of the word. They just have a lot of guys under big contracts. Whereas if you look at the Penguins, I mean, any team in the league would pay Malkin, Crosby, and Kessel what they're getting paid. And they don't yet have the problems where they need to start shipping out real key members of their core. And they might not have that problem for another 3, 4, 5 seasons, which really does speak to, as Dave mentioned, Jason Botterill and how great of a job he was able to do with the Penguins salary cap before going to Buffalo a couple months ago.
I don't think there was a better assistant general manager than Jason Botterill. And I don't think a team has managed the cap better than the Pittsburgh Penguins has. And you guys look at Olli Maatta, and he struggled maybe a little bit earlier on in the playoffs coming off of that injury. But 4 years left at $4 million cap hit. I mean, that's a fantastic contract, right? And so Chris Letang is obviously the big question mark there, under contract for 4 more years at $7 million plus. I think he's young enough in his career that he can come back from that injury, but there are some concerns there. But you know that Justin Schultz has emerged as a top-pairing defenseman for you, and a guy like Brian Dumoulin is an RFA. I imagine they're going to re-sign him.
They have the flexibility that a lot of teams that are back-to-back cup potential champions don't have, which speaks to their future going forward as a potential cup dynasty.
Would anybody be surprised if the Penguins, you know, are back in the Stanley Cup final next year or the year after or the year after? Right. When you have Crosby and Malkin, and you know, 1-2 down the middle, and Matt Murray in net.
Yeah, it would not be a surprise at all. When we come back, the expansion draft. We've got about 3 weeks to go. We'll talk about it from the Winnipeg Jets perspective. Anything changed? Anything, you know, have you changed your opinion as to which way the Jets need to go with that? Expansion draft talk up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. It's an icy Saturday on TSN 1290.
On the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Problems with the audio there, Rory? You look a little frustrated behind the board there. Yeah? Okay. Well, we're having some technical difficulties, but you have us, so that's pretty much, you know, all you can ever hope for. Right?
I don't notice any technical difficulties.
No,
sounds
well,
good.
Rory's supposed to be playing some audio right now, and I can tell by the frustration on his face that one of the computers isn't responding the way it should be.
Drew, just be happy that we're not experiencing a power outage.
That's true. The power outage has not happened just yet, and we have mini donuts, so you know we're okay in terms of sustenance here. But
and yesterday was Donut Day.
Wasn't
National Donut Day yesterday?
There's too many national days.
I agree with you.
Like, I think somebody said that yesterday was National Corona Day or something. I'm like, that's not a day. That's just Corona.
I think I was just, first of all, that was Ezra, and he just wanted to drink a Corona. Okay, let's be real.
I mean, I actually did drink a Corona yesterday.
That's amazing.
But, you know, you can't just name a day.
Hold on, I have a question. Did you drink it because it was National Corona Day or because you wanted a Corona?
I had no idea that it was National Corona Day. It was a hot day. We talked about that at the beginning of the show.
I'm surprised you'd have Corona stocked in the house.
Was actually at Naomi's mom's house.
Ah, so you didn't really have the, you didn't, you know, she's not stocking your favorite beers yet or anything?
And she has a pool as well, so I was able to jump into the pool. Shout out to Shelly, by the way.
Yeah. How'd that go?
And it was...
Were you the only one in the pool or did other
people go
in the pool?
On a hot day, what's better than going for a swim and having a beer?
Were you the only one in the pool or did other people go in the pool too?
No, Naomi was in the pool.
Okay, so there's just the two of you floating around in the pool?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, there was also some, you know, toys.
Floating around in the pool. Yep. Okay. Fair enough.
And Lucy the dog. She jumps in the pool.
Really?
Yep.
What kind of dog?
It is a cross.
Uh-huh.
It's a terrier retriever cross, and I think there's some other mixtures in there.
As he's taught her how to retrieve Coronas.
Lucy's an unbelievable dog. I call her the world's greatest dog.
Really?
Yeah, she's awesome. You know I love dogs. You love dogs.
I do have a dog. I would argue my dog is the world's greatest dog, but you know, there can be two dogs that win that award.
I didn't appreciate when Brixton bit me last time I saw her, but
that's because she's been instructed and taught to sick on you anytime she sees you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She's small, but she's feisty.
Quite feisty. Anyways, welcome back. Hour number two of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290.
It's the Westminster Kennel Club Dog Show.
3 weeks until the expansion draft. 3 weeks until the protected lists need to be submitted.
Drew, what are your thoughts on Dalmatians?
They're apparently very stupid dogs because they're quite inbred.
Really?
That's what they say, is that a Dalmatian is not a really bright dog. They're cute, but
I like
not
the way they
bright.
Look. Spots, I like that.
You've been hanging around some fire halls lately, seeing some Dalmatians at the fire halls?
Yeah, I've been going down some poles.
Okay. 3 weeks until the expansion draft. Anything change from your perspective as it comes to the Winnipeg Jets? Is it status quo if and when until the Jets are able to get Toby Enstrom to waive his no move clause?
Well, it's a good question. And, you know, Dave and I put together an article about who we thought that the Jets were going to expose in the expansion draft. And I don't think much has changed, Drew. And, you know, the big question mark for me is obviously, as you just mentioned, is Toby Enstrom willing to waive his no move clause? And what's the long-term health status of Tyler Myers, right? I mean, Tyler Myers' health was a big issue for the Winnipeg Jets this year, and it was obviously, you know, there were other things going on in his personal life. But, I mean, Tyler Myers is a top defenseman for this team, and he barely played at all, right? So, I mean, you expect Tyler Myers to be healthy for training camp, and we haven't heard otherwise, right, Drew? But, I mean, you're going to protect Tyler Myers. I don't see how you don't protect Tyler Myers. We know if Enstrom doesn't waive his no-move clause, the Jets are for sure protecting Enstrom, Byfuglien, and Trouba. I mean, there's absolutely no way they expose Trouba to Vegas. I mean, but again, what's the long-term future of Trouba? They're going to protect him even if he only plays one more year for the Jets. Obviously, they hope that he plays many more years for the Winnipeg Jets. But as far as the forwards go, I mean, again, we know Blake Wheeler, Mark Scheifele, and Brian Little are going to be protected, mm-hmm. especially if they go with option one. And then if it's option two, where you only protect four forwards, then it really comes down to, is it Adam Lowry or Matthew Perreault? And I've always said you go with Adam Lowry because of his age and his more favorable cap hit, right?
Mm-hmm.
So under each scenario, Drew, there is a strong possibility. And if you saw Craig Button do his expansion list on TSN.ca, and he had, I believe it was Joel Armia being taken by the Vegas Golden Knights. And then under another scenario, it could be Andrew Kopp, right?
Sure. That was Saravelli.
Yeah, Frank Saravelli had
I forgot who else was picking the expansion list. So when you talk about who the Jets could possibly lose, I don't see protecting Joel Armia or Andrew Kopp over any other forward. So in that sense, nothing has changed for me. But we just don't know which option they're going to go with. I tend to believe that they are going to go with the option of protecting four defensemen. I've always thought that. But again, it depends on the Toby Enstrom no move clause. And Dave, the thing is, we've talked about this now for, what, 2-3 months? But we have no idea if that's even an option for the Jets, right? It's all speculation at this point.
Right. And Kevin Cheveldayoff at his end of season press conference was asked about it, and he really didn't give anything away as to whether he would do that or not. But so that clearly is paramount for this team, is whether Enstrom will do that, because that would allow you to protect the forwards that, you know, many believe that you need to protect that as your core group. The other option, of course, is that you trade a pick, a draft pick or something to Vegas to kind of protect another player. So you say, okay, you know, we're going to expose Matthew Perreault, but we don't want you to take Matthew Perreault, so we'll trade you X to not select him.
We'll give you a fourth-round pick.
Whatever, whatever it is. You know, like, I don't know what the bar has been set at in terms of what you need to give them to provide that incentive for them not to take a player you want to maintain.
And it's been reported, Dave, that the Chicago Blackhawks will probably orchestrate some type of trade where the Vegas Golden Knights will trade for Marcus Kruger because they want to select Trevor Van Riemsdyk as one of their defensemen.
Well, what Chicago will do is Chicago will agree to expose Van Riemsdyk.
Yep.
And in exchange, Vegas has to take Marcus Kruger off the Blackhawks books as well. And this all, again, factors into the salary cap problems that the Blackhawks continue to have.
And the Jets don't have those salary cap issues.
Not by a long shot. The Jets, in fact, should be a team that assists another team with their salary cap issues.
Which obviously would allow them to acquire someone.
Like Carolina did last year. Carolina said to Chicago, we'll take Brian Bickle off your books, off your finances.
But give us Teravainen.
But we get Teravainen as well. The Jets should use the power that comes with having salary cap space.
Yep.
Now, the Jets will not have that salary cap space, or it's expected they will not have that salary cap space for too many more years. Eventually, they'll need to re-sign Brian Little and Nikolai Ehlers and Patrick Laine, and boom, there goes your salary.
Josh Morrissey.
Eventually. It could be
next
soon.
Year. Yeah.
Well, but, Brian, guys like Brian Little.
And you're going to save some salary cap space with Andre Pavlik coming up off the books, but in theory, you're going to spend that on a free agent goaltender.
Well, I'm not saying the Jets certainly shouldn't take on another team's obligation that's got 6 years on it, because that would be hamstrung.
No, the Jets aren't going to be a salary dumping ground like Arizona has been.
But they should be for the fact that they haven't been for the last couple of seasons, I think, is an error that the Jets organization has made. They should have been when they had all this cap room, because they were at the bottom of the NHL in terms of expenditures.
Well,
and
it depends,
cap.
Though, Drew, what the trade is and what you're benefiting, right? Like, if you could get a player like Teuvo Teravainen, for example, maybe you take on Brian Bickle's contract. But it's really hard to say unless you know what the specific players are.
Well, even if you're – look, when you have – the Jets haven't used their salary cap space at all.
And that's going to benefit them now when you have – Patrick Laine, Nikolai Ehlers, because you need that space.
Of course you need that space going forward, but the last couple seasons when you could have...
You're just saying it was a miss that they could have basically snagged a player or two as a result of taking on somebody else's obligation.
They could have taken Pavel Datsyuk and helped out the Red Wings in exchange for a draft pick like the Coyotes did or something like that. The Jets did nothing...
Yeah, but the Coyotes are a team that is really close to the salary cap floor, whereas the Jets aren't. The Jets are on the lower end of salary cap teams, but Arizona had other reasons for doing that, right?
Yeah, because they wanted to get to the floor. They wanted to artificially get to the floor without having to actually spend the money.
But regardless, Drew, your point is well taken as far as the Jets having the room to make a move like that where they take on someone's contract that isn't going to play in the NHL, whether that's a Datsyuk or whoever.
They clearly passed up that opportunity, and they're now at the point where that opportunity is, this would probably be the last year that they could potentially do that.
For sure.
given that they have all the other players then they now need to re-sign. Look, salary cap space is an asset, and the Jets didn't do anything with that asset when they had it. And that is, I mean, that's obviously an organizational decision.
Yeah, but again, Drew, we knew that the Jets weren't going to be a team that spent close to the salary cap ceiling.
It's not this, I mean, it's not the ceiling that they would have been, you know, you, from a fan's perspective.
They have an internal budget, right? They know what they want to spend.
I think that internal budget, yeah, they certainly do have an internal budget, fine. And far be it from me to tell True North how to spend their money. But I'm saying that.
You can tell me how to spend my money because I'm not very good with it.
And you don't have any of it to spend anyway, so you weren't able to buy any free agents at all. I'm just saying that
candy and hockey cards, Drew.
It's a missed opportunity to have had that cap space and not used it to buy an asset from another team in exchange for taking on a problem contract from another team. That's what I'm saying.
Sure, and it's a valid point. Back to the expansion draft.
Yeah, quickly, because we have Aaron Portsline coming up.
When you talk about, you know, some of the moves that the Jets might make, I do think, again, the Jets have the stable of prospects now where they can possibly move draft picks, whether that's their first-round pick, 13th overall, or it's a second-round or third-round pick. That's what I think is going to be very interesting to see, right? You saw that back in 2013 at the draft in Newark when the Jets traded for Michael Frolik. I believe that was 2013. It was 2013 or 14, the 14 draft in Philly. But they traded those two second-round picks for a guy like Michael Frolik.
Mm-hmm.
What I'm really going to be interested to see is if Kevin Cheveldayoff and the Jets management possibly dangle a prospect, you know, so whether that's a Nick Petan, whether that's, you know, another prospect in the system and a draft pick, again, whether that's first or second round, to maybe acquire a left-shot defenseman. That's something to keep your eye on, too.
Lots of moving pieces. They'll shape themselves out and figure it out in the next course of the next few weeks to a month, I suspect. Up next, Aaron Portsline of the Columbus Dispatch joins us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
The Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Saturday morning here on TSN 1290. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Ezra Ginsberg, Dave Minuk with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend Aaron Portsline. Aaron is with the Columbus Dispatch. He covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. Aaron, good morning, and thanks very much for joining us.
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, Aaron. Always enjoy you. Always appreciate your time. You know, just want to go back to the first round of the Stanley Cup playoffs now. It's been about 6 weeks, let's say, give or take, since the Blue Jackets and the Penguins met in that first round. And I entered that first round thinking, you know, the Blue Jackets, coming off their best season in their history, had an opportunity, a golden opportunity, to really take that next step as a franchise and you know, defeat the Penguins. Lo and behold, we know what happened. They were absolutely blitzed by the Penguins, and a disappointing end to the season for what had been a tremendous year for the Blue Jackets. Has that disappointment worn off in the front office of the Blue Jackets yet, or is there still that lingering distaste for how their season came to an abrupt end and, you know, I don't want to use the word meekly in sort of an insulting way, but how right. meekly they went out against the Penguins?
Well, I think it's hard to look back on this season, I think, for a lot of people as a smashing success just because the first round was over so quick. There were times where it was competitive, but it was a five-game series. Was it closer than that in some games? Maybe. Whatever. It was a five-game series. It was over really quickly. If it had gone to seven games and there's this monumental Game 7 performance, I think it would be easier for people. But the way that it fluttered away in the playoffs, I think, takes a little bit of the luster, well, a lot of the luster of the regular season off. I also think it shows growth as a franchise now that it's not about the regular season anymore purely. Like, there's clearly an expectation to make the playoffs next season, and it's not going to be about the regular season. There was a lot of it this year where it was like, wow, we can win games, and look, we're over 500, and look where we are in the standings. And I don't think that will be a big deal now. It'll be a big deal. It won't be as big a deal next year. Everything now is going to be judged upon their performance in the playoffs. I think the front office, if you want to put the coach as part of that, there's two different ways of looking at it. John Tortorella is devastated by how quickly they were out in the playoffs, really frustrated, disappointed, and seems as motivated as he was at this point last year to get that much better. I think the front office has to take a long-range view, and I think they look at it as, boy, look at the enormous growth that a lot of players took within this roster, and there's a reason to believe that should continue. So I think optimism prevails in the front office, and frustration or the real sense of drive exists with the coaches and the players.
You know, Aaron, you mentioned optimism and how disappointed the Columbus Blue Jackets organization was with going out in the first round of the Pittsburgh Penguins. And, you know, you mentioned the regular season as well. The Blue Jackets only finished 3 points behind the Penguins in the Metropolitan Division. Is it some solace to the Blue Jackets organization that they look at the Pittsburgh Penguins up 2-0 in the Stanley Cup final and they realize that how good the Penguins team is and how far the Blue Jackets really are away from taking that next step and becoming a Stanley Cup winner?
Yeah, maybe as the years pass, and maybe in 3 or 4 years when you look back, and if the Penguins win back-to-back cups, maybe it makes it a little bit easier. I think the prevailing thought here with the players is, geez, this should have been more competitive in the playoffs. I mean, it looks like they were a speed bump more than anything in the playoffs, not a real competitor of the Penguins. The other thing, too, I'm going to talk about Sergei Bobrovsky when we talk about this, because that's the real question here. There were times where the Blue Jackets did play pretty well and pretty good games in the playoffs against Pittsburgh. They were awful in net. Sergei Bobrovsky really, really struggled. He was by far the worst goaltender. Marc-Andre Fleury was really good in that first-round series, and that is now becoming an issue because Bobrovsky's struggled now throughout his playoffs career in the NHL. It doesn't make a ton of sense. He's played well in the Olympics. He's played well in the World Cup. He's played well in the World Championships. He's played on big stages and has done well, but his track record in the NHL playoffs is not good at all. And unless that becomes a major turnaround for him, I'm not sure what the Blue Jackets' outlook is in the playoffs, because he's been their guy for so much of this.
Aaron, we spent our last segment talking about the expansion draft, and we were talking about it from a Winnipeg perspective, but looking at it from a Columbus perspective, how likely is it, do you think, the team asks Scott Arnold to waive his no-movement clause?
Well, I think the debate that's going on right now is they will definitely ask him for that if they don't just decide to buy out his contract, and I really do think that is being contemplated right now. It's like, is that enough to do? Did they want him back? Period. There's no way they're going to let him eat up a roster spot and expose Josh Anderson. I just don't see any way that happens. I'm not sure what the appetite is at the ownership level to buy out a third contract in 2 summers. I think these are some of the moving parts that Columbus is facing right now, but I don't see them allowing him to take up, Hartnell that is, a protection spot, and there's no way they dangle Josh Anderson out there. They may not want to expose William Karlsson either. So I think it could be as simple of as either Hartnell waives it or they waive him, and it may not even depend on that. They may just decide to move on. He's a player that has struggled with speed for a long time. I still think he's an effective player. I still think he has a very important role to play in the room. I'm just not sure what his future looks like in Columbus right now.
Aaron Portzline is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Aaron's with the Columbus Dispatch. He covers the Columbus Blue Jackets. Aaron, one of the popular names when it comes to goaltending and the upcoming expansion draft is Jonas Korpisalo. We know that Bobrovsky's obviously the guy for the Blue Jackets in net, albeit given the struggles in the playoffs. from your perspective, is Korpisalo ready to take that next step and maybe become more than just an NHL backup? Is he ready to be a, you know, ease his way into being a top flight NHL goaltender?
I think he's close. I mean, there are some aspects of his game that are worrying. I think he was better 2 years ago than he was, I should say 1 year ago than he was this year. He is a athletic goalie. He can make incredible saves. It's the set pieces. It's the standard play, the positioning in a normal shot that has struggled with him, which is not unusual for a young goaltender. They're very high on him. Just from talking to people around the league, I think obviously Fleury or Miller is going to be the guy that ends up, or sorry, Murray, that ends up in Vancouver as the number one, I would think. I think the Grubauer makes a lot of sense as the number two, and maybe Korpisalo falls in as the number three. I think the Blue Jackets would be okay with that. I think they've got some, they would need to sign a veteran backup this summer, but they still like Forsberg, although he has struggled in the NHL. They have a young goaltender who has at least another year in Switzerland, Elvis Merzlikens, who could play in the AHL for sure right now, and I think he has a really bright future. I almost think that might be a relief for the Blue Jackets to spare them the worry up front. Everyone's trying to figure out what Vegas is going to do. Can you imagine being in Vegas's perspective in that three-day window with all of the moving parts, and you are at the middle of all of this with all these lines coming out in a million different directions? It's going to be fascinating.
Yeah, hopefully they know how to play chess very well.
Yeah.
Aaron, going back to earlier this week, the Columbus Blue Jackets sent their 2017 second-round pick to the Vancouver Canucks as compensation for signing John Tortorella, who was under contract. Why did they make that decision to send this year's pick? Does it have to do with the fact that this year's draft is considered a weaker draft?
I think that is part of it. I also think it's where Columbus is picking based upon their fourth-place overall finish in the league. So what better time than the present? Bad draft, really bad pick, figure 55. I mean, I think Columbus could have a really good season next year and pick 50th in the first round, the way that the league is so unpredictable these days. I think it's both of those things. You know, it's a hard thing. It's hard for teams to be at the combine and to be talking to kids and watching kids work out and then say, okay, we'll give up a second-round draft pick. But I think this decision was made months ago, really, and it's a common sense, I think, decision. Not a great draft class, a really good finish by your team, so you're in the back row of tables at the draft. Yeah, this is probably the smart year to give it up. And I should say this, I think they would do it again. I think they would trade a second-round draft pick for the ability to get to Tortorella again, because I think he's been that important for the franchise.
Now, Aaron, sticking with John Tortorella, how much pressure is there on John Tortorella to go far into the playoffs next season? Because as you mentioned, this Columbus Blue Jackets team has now put up a 100-point-plus season. You know, they finished high up in the Metropolitan Division. If he doesn't go far in the playoffs, is his job going to be in question this time next year?
Well, I don't know that I see it that way. I think it could morph into that as we move along here. I think the perception from people in Columbus is that Tortorella's whipping the roster into shape. And the fact that the team went out in the first round isn't put at Tortorella's feet. It's put at, you know, Bobrovsky's and the youth on the roster. I mean, it's the youngest team in the league. Look at the learning experiences that Werenski, Josh Anderson, Alexander Wenberg, some of these guys got in the playoffs. I don't think they see their departure as a failing of the coaching staff as much as it is growing pains and struggles on the roster. But, hey, they go out in the first round next year. I don't think anybody is spared from the criticism and what has become a, you know, it used to be a big deal here just to make the playoffs, and now I think the standard has lifted a little bit, where in an odd way, being a team that gets bounced out of the playoffs in the first round every year is a sign of progress. For now, it won't be that for long. It'll become a source of frustration. And yeah, sure, Tortorella will take some of the bullets along with the pieces of the roster. But if Bobrovsky struggles in the playoffs next year, then oh boy, you know, what do you do there? Because you can't keep running him out there, and you can't keep wasting these seasons in Columbus if your goaltender, for whatever reason, can't handle the big stage.
Aaron, back in April, a significant event occurred for both the Jets franchise as well as for folks in Columbus, in that Jack Roslick became the first Columbus-born player to play in the NHL. What impact has Jack's play in the, you know, getting to the NHL and his play overall had on the local hockey scene in Columbus?
Yeah, well, it's great. It's another step for the market of Columbus, and there's another kid that's hopeful of getting drafted this year, Carson Meyer, who's was a freshman at Miami University, just south of Columbus. Rostovic's a big deal. He's first kid born in Columbus to be drafted in the first round. There have others that have been raised here. Connor Murphy was raised in Columbus from the age of like 5 or 6 and was drafted in the first round. Now he's a regular in Phoenix. Sean Corrali has made a splash in Boston. It's a market that's really on the rise, and people raise their eyebrows a little bit when they hear the numbers, but there's well over 100 adult league teams in Columbus now. There are big time prospects coming up through the system. There's a kid a couple years away that's going to be going off to, he may go to Miami University, that's considered the best player to have come from Columbus, Anthony Vidrick. There are big time prospects, but they look at Roslovic, the way that Roslovic looks at Murphy, and the way that that Sean Corrali looks at Murphy is the way that Roslovic looks at Corrali. There's a real tight-knit community here. There's a lot of pride in it because they have done so well in developing young prospects. I mean, if you think about it, the city of Pittsburgh did not have a first-round draft pick from Pittsburgh until R.J. Umberger. So we're talking about a team that was from 1967, and when was Umberger drafted? 01, 02? That's a long time, and Columbus has turned that part of it on pretty quickly. It's a really good hockey community that remains a well-kept secret because of the struggles of the NHL team, but it really is a vibrant place, and Roslovic is a big, big part of that.
Yeah, Aaron, R.J. Umberger was drafted 16th overall back in 2001. That's the beauty of the internet here in studio. I wanted to ask you about
Hockey DB.
Yeah, absolutely, Hockey DB. I'm on there 20 times a day. Ryan Murray obviously was injured during the playoffs, didn't play against the Penguins in the first round. He's 23 years old now. He's going to turn 24 in September. He's played 4 years in the NHL. He's obviously had some significant injury problems. But when you look at Ryan Murray, he's got 1 year left on his contract, then he's going to be an RFA. Does he still factor in to the long-term plans of the Columbus Blue Jackets, or is that still undecided with Jarmo Kekäläinen? And this is a year to prove that he has earned that long-term contract, because we know that they're going to build the defense around Seth Jones and Zach Werenski.
Yeah. Well, I really think Ryan is a strong case to get traded this summer. I really do. I mean, he has settled into a role here in Columbus that, frankly, is beneath his ability and beneath his draft selection. Number 2 overall pick. Mm-hmm. That guy should not be playing on your third pair. I think there's been a little frustration from Ryan Murray that while the top four is settled here, with Jack Johnson and David Savard making a really good second pair, Werenski's not going anywhere. Seth Jones isn't going anywhere. Where's the opportunity here? I think he could very easily get traded this summer, especially we looked at it from the top part of it. The talent that's coming up from the back is significant, too. Gabriel Carlson looked like he can play in this league. Marcus Navarro looked like a really solid player. They've got some bright players coming up now that are pushing Ryan Murray, frankly, for ice time on the third pair. Now, does his injury history sort of mute the trade interest? I think it does a little bit, but I think there are teams that see a young, as you mentioned, 23-year-old player with a lot of upside who maybe just needs an opportunity and some playing time. So I think there is a strong likelihood he gets traded this summer. I don't think they feel like they have to trade him. I think that is the sense that it might be best for all parties, though.
Aaron, we'll let you go on this last question. Alex Wenberg had his breakout season for the Blue Jackets with 59 points in 80 games. He's an RFA, you know, entering July 1st here. Are the Blue Jackets looking to do a bridge deal with him, or are they looking to do a long-term contract? His numbers aren't too dissimilar to the numbers that got Mark Scheifele, his 8-year contract in Winnipeg last season. Scheifele coming off a year where he had 61 points and then signed that big deal. Is Wenberg sort of looking, eyeing that Scheifele contract as maybe a comparable?
Yeah, it's a good question. I'm not sure about Scheifele as a comparable. I do think that the Blue Jackets are not opposed. If you look back at the Ryan Johansson situation, that was purely a Ryan Johansson situation. So this is not an organization that has said we will not do long-term deals. We will not sign players past through their RFA, that you've got to sign two deals before you get the monster deal. I think there are situations where they would consider that. I'm not sure where Wenberg comes in on this. I think if you're the player and you've made an astronomical leap from year two to year three, do you want to lock in at that, or do you still feel like there is huge upside here? He's going to be playing with some really good wingers in Columbus and has the opportunity, I think, to surpass 70, get into the 80s in terms of points. He's that dynamic as a passer. Does he want to go super long term? I do think Columbus has been scared away in some sense by a long term contract. Most teams are. My sense is that it settles as a 3-year deal, nothing more than that, but I don't think it's a principled thing. I don't think it's a concern that Wenberg isn't locked in, is not a committed player as it was with players in the past. I just think it's what's best for both parties. I think that seems a reasonable term.
Aaron Portsline covers the Columbus Blue Jackets for the Columbus Dispatch. Aaron, always appreciate your time and your insight. Thanks for joining us this morning.
All right. Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Take care, Aaron. Thanks very much. When we come back, the trade winds are picking up throughout the NHL. We touch base with the TSN insider trading guys. We look around at the TSN trade bait board, the first one to be published since the NHL trade deadline. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.